It's a literal shocker. Two in the goo, one in the poo.
I'd like to think that I'd be able to do it, but I couldn't even have Tommy put that tampon in my ass.
You're listening to the Snoozy Podcast with
Shannon.
I don't have to ask for oral or anal because those are my only options.
Do I have to do anything gay besides getting fucking ass?
And we're back.
We are back. We are back at the Shamrock, and we're by ourselves.
I know. This is real culture shock right now.
This is Shannon Schnorr Cook, and I'm going to always say it backwards because it's funnier.
However you want to put it.
And I'm Ian Lazarus.
Liam Nazareth.
Who said that again? What's that from? Who called me that?
That was from Ryan Danisco when he was DJ Pussy Masher.
Yes.
And he
kept
fucking
couldn't
up
say
the
my
promo.
Name. That's right. That's right.
I'm Liam Nazareth.
Because there was a point when I first came around on the comedy scene where Eric Albert had Patrick Rabel purposely say my name wrong.
Really?
And I forget what he said, but it was like just a little off, and that's what it reminded me of right there. And I did and I got mad because like I guess you know what it is when I feel like I'm being laughed at, and they were being relatively good natured. I kind of flip a switch that defense comes on when I feel laughed at. I we all do, but I kind of get aggressive, and yeah. I got very aggressive up there.
I could imagine.
And it was the kind of thing where like you know, Jody Ross, Dalton, all the regulars were
the
there.
Who's who?
And they all know me as a sort of at that point I was still very passive. Still very sort of like happy to be there, and like something clicked that with that moment, and I had my fucking stupid notes that I you know have sometimes still, and I read it with such venom and like staring people down, and like I got off stage and people were just like, do that every time.
Oh, that's right. I think I did hear about this kind of peripherally, but I didn't know that it stemmed from Grable mispronouncing your name purposefully.
That was kind of the thing where I got like mad, and everybody's like, just do that every time. Because you're angrier than we realize, and it works.
Well, stage reveals a lot about people in that way. And also, I remember I was a big Doors fan. Jim Morrison famously, when he first joined the band, couldn't face the crowd. He would sing with his back to the crowd, facing the curtain.
He was shy?
Yeah.
Huh.
And he was too shy to sing out. And so then eventually, he just had this moment. I don't know what the catalyst was, but he finally turned around and faced the crowd and took on this whole other kind of Lizard King
right.
persona. And I think that's what the stage is very good at revealing. It kind of puts you, it backs you into a corner with the light shining in your face and this sea of people that you don't know that are there to like or dislike what you're doing.
Right.
It's kind of you get into this mode where then it's like, you know, you kind of end up going primal at a certain point and kind of finding yourself
on the
stage.
That's the way to put it, primal. I think even, I would say, God, 80 or more percent of the time that I've been on stage doing comedy, it's been a survival situation. It's been that sort of rush of just survival. And if I do well, it's like, okay, I survived. And I mean, mostly I've never done horrible other than a couple times recently. It's like, all right, well, we'll get them next time. But it really is. You have that same feeling where it kicks in, like, let's just fucking survive this.
I think that is really the essence of what stand-up is to me, is it's something that has always been in me, and I've always kind of found myself putting myself in the spotlight or the center of attention and kind of performing for people in private life. And so it's this compulsion that when you take it on and really just start doing it on the stage, it's like a momentum building where you're like, I can't stop now. Fuck.
Right.
And it's
this
kind of
I need to do.
Half like adrenaline bravery and half like fear-based thing where it's like, I don't even really want to do this now, but now I feel like I have to. Like
right.
You've got something to prove. And that's where the good stuff happens, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Once you can let go of the fear, and I've never been... Not never, mostly not afraid, but when you let go of the fear and just say, fuck it, like whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Like here I am, I got to do it now.
Yeah.
I mean, because sometimes, especially for the other comics, like sometimes the most awkward moments or the weird moments, and if you can embrace For me, I've definitely, well, other than this one time recently, but I can embrace the silence. I can embrace the awkwardness. And once you can kind of do that, I think you're on your way.
Yeah. Well,
because that's going to happen.
That's the fear, is the worst thing that can happen to you as a comedian or as a performer in anything. If you're performing something and you get no reaction, that's the fear. And I don't know, I think maybe it was even from Game of Thrones or something like that, but there was some quote about, like, there is no bravery without fear.
Right.
Because if you're not afraid in the first place, you're not being brave. You're just doing something without anything attached to it. But real bravery shows itself when you're doing something that you're scared to be doing, but you're making yourself do it anyway for whatever greater good. And so once you hit that mode of it and kind of ride that and see where it takes you, that's really where things start to kind of, I don't even think it's evolve. I think it's devolve. I think you start to like deconstruct yourself as a human being, you know, and get down to the nitty gritty of it.
And just, I guess it's sort of, I mean, again, for me, a lot of it is more, I'm still new and I doubt my skill set sometimes, but it's, I don't want to get myself into a situation that I can't get out of or dig a hole that I'm not prepared, whether it's with a heckler or whatever it is. But with that being said, once you're up there, I mean, some of the best things you're going to see, whether it's any form, whether it's sports, any event, whether it's a performance, is the unexpected or something that makes you feel that night or that performance is unique, good or bad. You're going to remember that. And I guess being the one up there doing it makes it a little bit intense. But again, like once you can accept and get through it, and embrace it. I can embrace the awkwardness of the silence. I mean, it takes, when you first start out, at least for me, when I first started out, I would step over my punchlines. I wouldn't wait for the laugh. I was ashamed to get laughs. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, who the fuck am I?
I'm not worthy of this.
That, yeah. Or just even like, exactly.
Which is how we all end up in comedy in the first place.
But that's exactly it. I remember getting advice from a lot of, you know, veterans early on, like, no, you wait for every second of those laughs to stop. You've earned them. It's part of the rhythm.
Yeah.
And they can't hear you. They're not ready to hear the next thing yet. But to stand up there, good or bad, takes some kind of practice to just be able to stand there in front of strangers and accept whatever they're giving.
And just be. It's like, performance art in a sense that you would see. There's like modern dance companies where like one of the whole routines is just like someone standing there, you know, making heavy eye contact with the whole audience and then like slowly, silently taking off their clothing.
Right.
Things like that where it's the ultimate confrontation that you can have. Even people's nightmares. Everyone has had a nightmare about whether it's being in school, in the auditorium, or in some capacity, like you just end up being vulnerable on a stage.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Or a school bus or some situation where you've been either hurt or scared.
Because it's, I think, in my opinion, the same thing that you can apply to anything in your life, in the human experience, where all anybody really wants from the moment they're born is to be the center of attention. And when you get it, it's like, okay, now what do I do with it? And that becomes the test. When you get what it is you're looking for, when you have everyone's attention, what are you going to say? What are you going to do? How are you going to use that?
And weird enough, in my case, and I think we touched on this a little at the end last week, whether it's, you know, attention, whatever it is, it seems like most things that I think I want, when I get them, I don't care.
Yeah.
And I think there's an emptiness somewhere that, and now again,
it's the black hole that lives in you and I.
Right. It's true. But even if I get what I'm seeking, whether it's attention, whether it's a fucking expensive watch, whatever it is, whether it's anything that I think I desire, it never meets the expectation or just doesn't like quell that sort of an inadequacy or tension or whatever it may be that I think is going to be ended with it.
Well, that's why I think the fundamental nature of things like Buddhism, where it's all about stripping all of those wants and desires away and being just happy within yourself.
Too late.
Yeah. That's the one kind of Eastern solution to the common problem, which is we all have these big, you know, some of us it's like bullet holes. Some of us, it's like a cannonball went through us. These big holes that are left in us from things that happened to us. And it creates this vacuum of you're going to try and fill it with anything that will, you think will make you happy. Right. And there's things where it's like, oh, that Snickers bar will make me happy for 20 seconds in the car. Or, you know, this bad sexual based decision will make me happy for, you know, 5-10 minutes.
It's me,
know,
a lot less.
And then ride the high a little bit. Or these more lofty goals about careers or about, you know,
families,
your mother
cars,
validating right, you right. or, you know, having all this money. We place our happiness in these external scenarios that once we attain whatever small or large thing that is that we've projected that onto, we take it into ourselves and realize that this is not what I was looking for.
But then, and then I envy two kinds of people, mainly because this is probably most people that I encounter outside of my immediate circle, with the people that are either too unself-aware or stupid or ignorant or whatever you want to call it, where they, yes, they might be trying to fill these small or large holes, but they're so unaware of it. And these cries for attention are so just automatic. They're on autopilot. They're happening. And they kind of almost have a false sense of contentment.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the stupidest people are the happiest. Of course.
Ignorance is bliss.
Right.
Always.
It's the same old, that old expression is true.
Yeah.
And I also envy people who can truly, like you said, whether it's, you know, Eastern philosophy, can really be made happy by the smallest things and mean it.
Yes.
I envy both of those because I'm somewhere in the middle where it seems like on paper, I think we touched on this even last week, I have everything. What else could I ask for? You know, of course, we all can have like fucking, you know, fantasies about
that hooker should never have lived.
Well, that's the one thing. I'm still waiting for the statute of limitations, but some people just, and I think I'm one, I think I could say you're somewhat in that, like, I'm not going to be happy. I've got to face the fact that I'm probably going to die unhappy.
I walk a very fine line in my life where, like, I am one of those, I'm always striving to be Buddhist, like most Buddhists. It's kind of like you're trying to get down to that point. And then there's other parts of me that are so human and just willing to, you know, pay attention to that gossip or buy into that drama or get caught up in stupid kind of human things that it's like, alternately, I could be sitting there alone and like watching a butterfly land on a flower. I can have this like epiphany. And then an hour later, you know, I'm dealing with like someone in my family or something. And it's like, I will just get sucked right into some ridiculous thing without catching myself. So it's like always trying,
but to
like,
me, like
not the, making
the,
it.
The, in a sense, the beauty and torture of it all is that both of those moments mean nothing. Like the butterfly and they both mean nothing.
And I agree with that
this
completely
whole thing,
as well.
Like everything to me, and again, that's part of the problem too, is I don't see meaning in much. I mean, it's all going to end. I'm terrified of that. And what's the point? Great that, you know, and I definitely have moments of enlightenment, of appreciating beauty, of the simplest thing, and it really touches my soul. But at the end of the moment, I'm like, well, okay, great, now what? Now I'm going to die someday. Back to that.
Okay. This is going to be the Not Funny Loose News podcast, obviously, but I'm going to go down this rabbit hole. So I kind of am always torn in this thought process of like kind of seeing things in this sequential, like micro to macro kind of thing, where it's like I could see myself being like existing in one little particle of the neuron structure of God. But then I think, well, if the universe looks so much like a neural structure of a brain, what's to say I don't also have universes existing within me and downward, you know, into Whoville from there and then like up into who knows. So even though I'm like in the scheme of things, I mean nothing, we're still a slave to our perception of we're only looking outward, not inward. So what seems like a moment in time and like a drop of a bucket, this could be a trillion years to some other
right.
level of energy that's existing somewhere.
And guess what? We're never going to know.
No. I mean, and I don't think we could function if we did.
Right. So I barely can function now not knowing.
It's nicer to smoke a bowl under a tree and wonder. You know?
I mean, if I really give too much thought about either... I had moments in my youth... I remember them very vividly where I would just almost go into a trance. I'd be at the beach or a pool club or just mostly in the summer when I had real leisure time, school's out, and I'd go into a trance and like almost think back 50 layers deep to my ancestors, and I'm like, wow, how am I here? How the fuck am I here? And it would blow me away. I couldn't comprehend the fact that I'm alive.
Can I just tell you, and I've never met anybody that described anything similar in my life, and I've told many people about this, but I remember being in my crib, like very, very, very small, and being frustrated at the entire situation, being frustrated that I couldn't talk and express the thoughts that were happening in my mind, and this like total awareness where I would just look around and it would like, I would sigh. I would be like, well, here we go. Like with this prior knowledge somehow. And I'm not a religious person. Like I have no validation for this. It's just my memory. I've always had.
Remember being like an infant.
Yes. And everything vividly. Since. Yes, vividly. But always having this feeling of like looking at myself and being like, well, this is my body. This is my family. This is my house. Like, here we go. As if I'd done it 1,000 times before. Like, it was like being brought back to something that like, you were like, oh no, this again? Like I was in the middle of something.
It's like being woken up from the good dream.
Yeah. And almost even, this sounds kind of morbid or sketchy, but like coming in knowing that there were going to be these real like trials for me and just being like, oh, like this is going to be such a bummer. You know, and I don't know how to explain that. I also used to be able to, like, I would leave my body easily. And again, this is where I'm going to have a bunch of people rolling their eyes. But, like, I vividly remember leaving my body. Anytime I woke up from sleeping, I would be, like, crashing into myself. And then I could force myself out. And then as I got older and older and older, like, I couldn't just do it at will. It would be like I'd really have to work at it. And then eventually by like the age of 7, it was just gone.
So it wasn't a dream though?
No, this was how I lived.
So you saw yourself from the outside?
Yeah.
Like did you travel elsewhere? Like where were you off to?
I don't have much cognizance of that. It wasn't anywhere on Earth. It was like I would always just kind of like float up and out. And it wasn't like I went to a place. It was more like I dissipated.
That's terrifying.
Where it's like my energy spread out and that was the way it was comfortable. And then it would be like it would come gathering back. And then like as it like pulled in tighter to itself, it would also like be sinking and then falling and falling and falling. And I'd always like come crashing back into myself. And that would be just how I'd wake up. And that also got less and less and less as I got older. I'm not attributing this to anything.
Right.
It's like people can do with this what they want. I don't hold myself to any faith or anything in particular. But this is a real thing that I've experienced and have always, during childhood and since, like reached out to other people trying to see if anyone else had anything similar.
I mean, the only thing I can relate close to that is a dream. But okay. It's a dream. Like I wake up suddenly or you feel like I've always had dreams that I'm like driving my car up a bridge, like up the Throgs Neck Bridge in Queens.
Okay.
And then just falling down. And I had this, but that's not the same thing. I mean,
so clearly, like as a bridge is being raised?
No, not even up the actual like stanchions, like up the bridge. Oh. Where I've always been afraid of roller coasters where sometimes it would start off that I'd be on a roller coaster and it would turn to a bridge. Funny enough, bridge of all things. But I've had recurring dreams. It was. No, it was not. But I've always had recurring dreams about bridges and driving down them fast. And I'd wake up before I hit. But that's not what you're saying. I mean, but what you are saying in a sense is, again, whatever it is, you're saying there's something more than meets the eye, whether it's – there's something mystical about this life.
There's – this is all I can say – and it's not even for sure. In my experience, I feel like there's definitely many, many layers. And I know scientifically speaking, just when you look at anything ever, it's all just different wavelengths of condensed or not condensed energy. And everything that we're made of was created and put together within stars and like all these crazy things. And it's like we in our human experience are more caught up in like Kim Kardashian and Kanye West and Taylor Swift and all this bullshit, or even just politics, which is important, but when you think about the real reality of things or the imagined nature of reality and trying to break through our perceptions of that, I always feel like I'm existing in this plane where, like, none of these things matter. And I can't understand why they matter so much to other people.
Yeah, I agree with.
Yeah.
I do feel like I put very little meaning in anything. Even politics, you name it. Even like relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love many people. But a lot, again, at the end of the day, I guess it's almost like a nihilism. I get passionate about sports. There's certain moments that I really will feel something. My family, my children, my wife, whatever it may be. But when I'm laying in bed at night, you know, having trouble to go to sleep, it's like, what the fuck is going on? This life has never seemed real to me.
Same.
Ever.
Yeah.
This doesn't, like, and there's too many also just coincidences to be coincidences. Too many things happen.
There's a lot of synchronicity.
Yeah, there's a real order to things that obviously I can't uncode or decode.
Yeah.
But I see it.
Well, I think, again, that's the nature of energy. When you break everything down and it's really this energy, we're all just like magnets repelling and drawing to us all these things based on what type of energy we're holding on to or projecting. And there's many, many things in line that just in life where it just aligns, you know, things that fall into your lap, things that didn't work out that you really wanted to. And you see kind of how it comes together, like something zippering itself. And it's like, I'm just going to let go and stop trying to control it and just kind of go for the ride.
I have those moments all the time in hindsight, but in the moment, maybe I'm too simple or weak. I have a hard time telling myself that, like, don't get too high, don't get too low. But I tend to get too high or too low a lot, you know. And on top of that, advice I would give somebody else that's valid, I can't take that advice.
Of course.
Hey, relax. Things, you know, work out the way they're supposed to be. But when it's me, maybe I'm harder on myself. I believe what I'm saying.
It's not even a case of being harder on. That's a symptom of it. But I think it's almost impossible for most people to be objective about themselves.
Right.
We are a slave to our experience. It's like, you know, any country thinks it's the greatest country, you know, and every person in every war has thought they were on the right side.
And there's just fake borders existed between all these countries. They're not even real.
Exactly. We are a slave to our experience of these man-made constructs of societal things and laws and borders and humanity somehow being so chosen and special that we lose sight of our real place in the order of anything.
But if we had that sense, then what? I just picture like naked people wandering the earth. Like, then what? Like, what do we do if we did realize that? You know what I mean? Like, I almost, maybe I'm just so programmed into the system, but like, I can't imagine a different world that I'm in. I can't even fathom it.
I think that's the utopia that everyone from the dawn of time has kind of projected, is that the ultimate goal would be this world where everything's living in harmony. You know, there's none of this, you know, hatred and just harm.
Except the fact that like some dudes have smaller dicks than others, or some people, there's always going to be insecurities, which lead to jealousy, which leads to resentment, which leads to lashing out.
But that's if you are trapped in that human mentality of trying to pass your genes on.
But that is the human mentality, right?
Yes.
Isn't it?
But that, again, is the nature of other ways of enlightenment, where it's kind of like rising above and changing your frequency to see the true nature of life and
right.
where everything's falling, and the fact that like that really doesn't matter. Like my dick being small.
Does. No, you're right. But in a sense, but human, I just, again, human nature is what it is. Like that, I can't imagine that not being, there's a reason why certain animals lead the pack. You know, there's always going to be a natural order.
But lead the pack, their own pack, or like
their own pack. I mean, there is
yeah,
isn't there typically a matriarch or a patriarch of each?
But
and
even
there's a reason for that.
That's within their own society,
right?
But then there's like how you fit into the pack of, your own environment, which consists of many other species and things beyond just the small world you're living in.
I just can't imagine. And again, that's you're right. That is sort of the utopian, you know, hallucination almost of someone not stealing your portion of food so they can't have extra.
But that's when you said what would happen then. That's what would happen.
But it can't happen.
It probably can't. Not anytime.
Not with humans involved. Again, you're right. If we could change the frequency, but I just can't imagine that
from
the dawn of time.
The human condition is such that, you know, we're holding a card as human beings that there's nothing in nature that's holding the other card that's going to check and balance that.
Correct.
So we're now out of control. I mean, if you look at Earth from a distance and you look at the places where humans are clustered, it's like, it literally looks like cancer.
Right.
You know, it's just scarring the face of the earth and lighting it up with unnatural thing. I mean, it's just the whole thing from a distance.
It's
you're like, oh my God, what is this?
We're almost like teenagers given a Ferrari before we get a driver's license.
Yeah.
Like we have no idea what the fuck we're doing. We walk around with like fucking comfortable tennis shoes. Like we're so comfortable.
Yes.
So comfortable. We're all Paris Hilton. Like we've all like inherited this fortune that we haven't earned. Back to Pearl Jam, there's a line in one of their songs, it's about George Bush, and it's something to the, it's born on third, thinks he hit a triple.
Yeah.
And that's us. We were all born on third base and didn't get the base hit to get there.
And again, it's like, well, a lot of that came from just harnessing fire. Something so stupid. And it's not something man made. It's something that man learned how to use and control at their will. And because of that, I mean, just nutritionally, it affected the nutrients that were able to be released. It affected the way that our brains were able to hold on to things, so on and so forth. But it's like, if that hadn't happened, we'd still just be, you know, picking fleas on a tree branch.
Right.
If you aren't a creationist, per se.
But then it mattered, like, you know, and then I guess, back to your... your very mystical, you know, youth.
Oh, no,
like,
my mystical youth.
But like, did that happen at the youngest age possible? Like, we're talking like back in the days of being an infant, or
no? I mean, like I said, I remember laying in my crib and just being frustrated because I couldn't speak, I couldn't move myself.
Were you unhappy in general?
I don't want to say unhappy, but I always felt somehow like put upon. Like, I was doing a chore I didn't want to do, but I was always fun and entertaining.
That's what I was going to say, because I guess what I'm getting at is I'm imagining most of your youth, not so much, but like, I would imagine a good portion of your youth just being like either unhappy or frustrated.
I was rarely happy.
And with that said, like, if you and I go out in a social situation, you're able to sort of, for however you do it, be social, be friendly, be kind, where I kind of just shrivel up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's weird how it matters. And my childhood, I'm sure, was nothing as, you know, it wasn't that bad.
Well, when you look at it, if there's children that are traumatized, usually their first response is not to give in to the trauma, but to figure out ways to hide it.
From
whatever powers that be, people close to you, school, whatever. Most children respond with figuring out ways to hide it. For me, that was, you know, like, oh, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain, jazz hands, like, you know. So I was always, you know, spinning yarns and performing and, you know, getting on tables and singing into a microphone. Yeah.
As a kid.
Yeah. From the time I could stand, I was just forever like putting myself on fake stage scenarios and kind of like creating a diversion around the shit show that was really my life.
Now, was that in your head or did you have a shitty life?
Oh, no, I had a shitty life.
So you had a shitty life?
Yeah. I mean, I can't say from birth, but even then, when you really look at it, I mean, I'm sure my mother and father were fighting when I was in utero. They were certainly fighting when I was a baby, and, you know, then things progressed from there. But no, I wouldn't say I ever had a happy, safe, secure life.
Hmm.
Nor did most people, you know, some more than others. But even things from a distance, you know, can look good when they're not.
Yeah, you don't, I mean, I don't think people know what goes on behind closed doors. And I think my family always prided itself, too, on just keeping our personal business in those walls.
Exactly. I remember, and you come from a cop family.
Yes.
I also, my father wasn't, but everyone before him, like, I come from a long line of, like, Irish city cops. And it's very much a mentality of, like, any problems you have, you keep them to yourself. You know, you don't tell anybody anything right. that would, you know, call your family into question or bring shame on your family or anything like that. It was like everything stays close.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. You just, you know, take that pain and you eat it.
I remember being blown away when I started dating Kylie, my wife, where, and funny enough, her father is a police officer, and it was so the opposite where even down to like talking about how much money people make or whatever, everything was so open. There was no shame. There was no secrets. Yeah. And they really communicated with each other. And
well,
to this day, I admire the fact that they're able to just speak.
What side of her family is that?
Her father.
And her father's what ethnicity?
Black.
I think from what I've seen, black families tend to be more open and kind of like overall supportive. Like they look at themselves as a clan almost, where like
running from the clan.
No, clan was the wrong word to use, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like it's kind of like a family who's all in it together, you know,
except
community.
For the father.
But in her case,
right. He was, well, he married a white woman. You don't leave white women.
Oh, that's true. So
18 years.
But I think like, you know, someone from an Irish Catholic background or like the other side of my family's all like, you know, uptight French.
And there's also that Catholic element of it. Yeah. Shame and guilt.
Jewish, oh, you know, conversely, there's that it's things are much more private and guilty.
But I'm okay.
And like
I'm
you carry this burden.
I'm okay with some of that. And to be honest, I do like, and now that I raise kids, I don't necessarily need our family is our family. We're a unit. Yeah. And look, when they get older, obviously they can do as they wish, but I do want to keep a lot of our personal business within our house.
Oh, of course.
So there's a fine line. I mean, I don't want to repress. I don't think I'm that kind of person, but.
But raising children in that mentality, like I always tell my son, like if there was ever anything bad that happened to you, you know, in any capacity, like if you, for whatever reason, don't feel comfortable telling anyone in this house or this family, go to a guidance counselor, go to a therapist.
And they'll tell you, though.
Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to make sure that I didn't create a scenario where, like, if there were things that were happening to him where he didn't feel comfortable
right.
telling someone in the house, that doesn't mean don't tell anyone.
Right.
Because I was brought up kind of with that. Like, you don't tell the people at school anything, ever.
Was it a specific thing they didn't want you to tell or just anything?
Nope. It was just anything. Because they would just tell me stories about like so-and-so's daughter went to school and said blah, 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 and now she's in foster care. And it was always kind of like this, with nothing specific, but this overlying idea of if you tell the school or a therapist anything,
right.
you know, that they might misconstrue and morph around, that like you'll be taken away.
Looking back, they probably would have wished you would have done that.
Boy, they really shot themselves in the foot.
Were they open at least to you going to them?
It was the type of thing that they would kind of, I mean, I don't even know that they said it. It wasn't like they wouldn't allow that, but it was a situation where if I ever did go to them with even minor things, it was kind of like, oh, I'm busy, Shannon. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, it was usually kind of pushed away
right.
in one way or another that made me feel not comfortable.
Nothing. And, you know, my dad, I guess both, my dad always seemed like, and to this day, and I've learned to, I guess, either not let it bother me, work around it, not care. Anything that I tell him happens, oh yeah, that happens to everybody. It's more that happens to everybody mentality
yeah.
where, you know, nothing is unique to me. And
mm-hmm.
of course, everything is unique to me and
yeah.
to everyone. But it's always been just this sort of commonality of human existence. We all go through this.
Yeah.
You know what? We fucking don't.
Life isn't fair. and blah, blah, blah.
Or just even like, oh, you had a baby. Great. We all have babies. Or oh, yeah. You hurt your back. We all hurt our back. And oh, you, whatever it is. And any scenario that I've given, it's never like personal attention or moments that I probably should have been put into therapy or hugged or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're fine. And I mean, a lot of it was like, I didn't go to them a lot because I'm like, I got this. I've always felt like I'm weak, but I'm strong. It's a weird dichotomy. But when I did go to them, now they love me. Everyone does the best they can, I guess the best they can, but it just never felt like it was treated with the care that it should have.
Agreed.
It's always like, oh, Ian's a fucking, I don't know what it is. I don't feel like I've ever been taken seriously.
I was always, this is a common phrase that was thrown around. It's always something with you. So it was like, whatever it was, if I came home complaining about being bullied, you know, I'd have my mother being like, well, everyone gets bullied.
Right,
and then
exactly.
My father exactly. would be, what you know, you punch him in the face.
Right, right.
You that's, know, that's and then my say. Mother right. would be like, what are you doing? You can't tell her that's, to do that. And
I'm
then,
living that right now. Where yeah. I say that. Now, I don't know if I say it somewhat jokey, but in a way, that is sort of what I believe. But my son especially is so peaceful.
And nowadays, I mean, it really is a case of, you know, the school has told me flat out with my son, if for whatever reason the kid could say the worst thing in the world to him, if he happens to lay hands on him, you know, the cops get called.
Right.
This happened, you know, like the child is taken away in handcuffs.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah.
Even if you hit back.
There's zero tolerance.
Even if you hit back.
If the two of them are striking each other, they both get taken away, even if they didn't initiate it.
Right.
Even if, unless Fuck you were that. Just laying there being beaten on. Like, it's an incident now. So things aren't like that anymore. You know, because even when I was coming up, kids got into scuffles all the time in the hallways and whatnot. And it was treated pretty seriously even then in the 90s. But like now it's a whole other ballgame and there really is no tolerance for it. So when you have the grandparents or the this one or that one saying, oh, just, you know, punch them or, you know, meet them in the parking lot after school. It's like you can't do it anymore. It just doesn't exist this world.
I think I told the story when Dalton was here for sure, but my son with Little League a couple last summer. This kid, I think, was emotionally not right,
mm-hmm.
but he did things on purpose. He was like throwing baseball bats toward the team huddle, and so this kid was kind of fucking with everyone, and it was dangerous. And the first thing that happened, well, no, not the first time that I reacted. Finally, he hit my kid either with a ball. A baseball, and his father and I were both helping out the coach, and I went to the father, he hit my kid. That's what it was. He like punched him like in the chest or something. And my son could not be more peaceful. It wasn't that bad, but it was bad enough. He hurt him. He knocked the wind out of him. So I went up to the father and I told him what happened, and I nicely said, "If he hits my kid again, I hit you." And he kind of like nervously laughed, and I just didn't. And I'm not tough, but in that moment I was, and I can be, and. Then, you know, things happen here and there, and the coach became hyper aware once that happened. Now that I made a fucking scene, and the first game of fall, so the first game back from this whole break, he pushed my son off second base. Like my kid hit a double or whatever, he pushed him off. And my son looks at me like, what the fuck do I do? So I walk onto the field, I bent down to the kid, and I said, if you put your hands on my son again, I'll break your fucking face. The kid's 7 or 8. And he gave me this, like, you know, fucking retard face. And I'm like, listen, do you understand what I'm saying to you? And he goes, yeah. And he nodded his head. And I shouldn't have done that. My wife's an educator. I shouldn't have done that. But I think I'd do it again. I don't know. And you told me a story, I think, similar to that.
I was just going to say, I'm like, the only moment that I've really ever come out of my fucking tree was at, I was the assistant coach for T-ball when my son was playing T-ball. And he and his little girlfriend at the time were special needs. And there were these, you know, regular kids there too. And there was this one kid who just was always kind of a dick. Like, I knew he'd be like that popular jock in high school, like just one of those. And I overheard him with a couple other boys making jokes about my son and his friend. And I heard him just say awful things, like he called them retards and this and that. And I went right to the coach and I was like, can I handle this? And he was like, yeah, sure. And that was his huge mistake. And I like called the kid over and like took him aside and like grabbed him by his shirt and like got in his face. And I was like, hey, if I ever hear you talking about anyone that way again, blah, blah. And I went into a whole thing and I was like shaking, like tears were coming down my eyes. And it was one of those things where it was like, I will end you.
You literally said
no
that.
No one will find you. Like,
were that kid's parents there?
Yeah. But I made it look from a distance, you know, and it was just like, I really like lost all composure because it was like, I was standing up for my son, not myself, but it was like all those years of people being shitty to, it was just like, I'm going to just like stop this now. And I really scared the fuck out of that kid.
Nice.
I'm so happy about it.
And it's so painful. First, I mean, to me, there's almost nothing worse than a bully and picking on the weak and I mean, to think back to I mean, I've had moments of being bullied and you know, not horrible, but bad enough in high school, especially when I was older, I was a man almost, and it's just emasculating. But with my kid, and again, because he's so sweet and innocent and a spaced cadet, and just that is what, but there's nothing I can do because really he needs to get out there and toughen up. Yeah. I can't fight his battles. And again, I should have done that for a lot of reasons in that case. Even like, you know, here's a dumb example. Recently, he was hanging out with a couple of his friends. They're, you know, they're 8, 9. They all have Instagram accounts at this age.
Oh, God.
And he was hanging out with them one night late after school at one of their houses. And what, I guess what happened was they took a picture of him like picking his nose and they both put it on their Instagrams.
This was your asshole picture, but on the small early scale.
Right, exactly. And it wasn't his choice either. Like, I made a choice, but you're right. So they put it up there, and I, for whatever reason, one of his fucking 8-year-old friends follows me, so I kind of followed him back just to keep tabs.
And so it wouldn't look suspicious with all the other 8-year-olds who follow.
He blends in to the pack of cards. And I saw the picture, and my son's like just playing a video game. I'm like, hey, what's this? Maybe I should have told him. I'm like, what's, this isn't cool, because I don't like, these kids already bother me.
Yeah.
I don't like these kids so much. And he was like hurt. It's embarrassing, all his little 8-year-old friends. So I first tried to message both of them, private messages, yo, take this down. I was, as his dad, I'm like, fuck, what am I doing? He was trying to like FaceTime them and call them because he has like a phone without phone service. He's on Wi-Fi. And because we couldn't get a hold of them, what I ended up doing, I couldn't think of anything else. I Photoshopped both their faces onto ballerinas. And I just put that, that's all that I could think of at that moment. And I tagged them both in it and I put it on Instagram. And
you're an adult bully.
Well,
you're like, the only way to stop bullying is to bully them.
I didn't know. I mean, I don't even know now what I should have done or should have done there, but I was so fucking mad.
Societally, I disagree with what you did, but real, like, again, like kind of primal me is so happy that you did that.
No, I can't. Again, I don't even know if I can reconcile how I feel about that, because clearly, at least wait till the morning. It was night. It was late. Kylie's sleeping. It's like late. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm on there. I'm fighting with kids.
I'm fighting with kids on
but
Instagram.
I've never been afraid. Not afraid. Like, I've always, as far back as I can remember, treated someone, whether they're 90 or 2 or 7, like someone's a prick, they're a fucking prick.
Yeah.
And again, I know I'm more evolved and I'm older and I should probably be able to, you know, curb certain actions. Emotions, no, or feelings, but actions. But I kind of can't. Even like as a camp counselor, I've been a camp counselor twice. I've hit a kid both times. And they're fucked up stories both times. But like one,
Wait. Yeah. Can we take a quick break and then come back and have you tell both those
kid
stories?
Kid hitting coming up after the break.
Stay tuned.
And
we're back.
So, I was a camp counselor twice. The first time was...
All I can think of is Canteen Boy, but go on.
I wish.
You are Alec Baldwin in my mind right now with the little scarf. Just go ahead.
I'm picturing it.
I seen it.
I was working at this very ritzy day camp in the Five Towns on Long Island, the like really rich area of Long Island. And I'm, you know, being a city kid or whatever. So
where the rich unload their trust fund children?
That's right. Like all kids of lawyers, doctors, politicians, the whole shit. Was it East Rockaway?
The kids that matter.
The kids that will matter someday, right? The White Lives Matter movement. And long story short, so I was the counselor for this one group, and we were playing this game called Errors in the classroom. We were in like these classrooms, and Errors is you throw a baseball back and forth, and you're in like a line. I'm by myself, and there's a line of kids in front of me, and you throw it back and forth.
And this time they weren't picking you out of a lineup.
I was picking them out of a lineup. So if they drop the ball or don't catch it cleanly, it's an error. They sit down. So the it's like almost like musical chairs. The last one standing wins. This one spoiled prick kid, like he makes an error. I'm like, oh, you're out. And he's like pissed. I'm like, no, you'll get in the next game.
Don't you know who my father is?
Well, it's getting there, sort of. So sort of without thinking, he cocks back and throws. And now we're probably 4 feet apart, maybe less.
How old is this kid?
7 to 9, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
9, give or take. And I was probably 17, 18. So he rears back, and it's a baseball. It's a hard ball. Throws it hard. Hits me in the throat with this baseball. Right, not in the Adam's apple, but right to the, you know, like near the jugular, like in the side of the throat. It hurt. So without me thinking, I instinctively ran at him and like side kicked him in the ribs, and he flipped over like a desk.
Oh my God!
And he's down, not like fucking quivering or convulsing, but he's down and he's like crying. So my first reaction is like, I take out a pack of gum and I'm like, I'll give you some gum. Don't tell on me. For whatever reason, that's the first thing that came. It's what I had.
This line usually works.
I got 10 more packs in the van. So he's a mess. He's crying. So because now I hurt his ribs with my kick and his other side ribs with the fucking chair and desk that he flipped over. And he's down. He kind of gets up and...
Oh, I misunderstood. I didn't know there was an actual desk involved. I thought you were saying he flipped over like a desk.
No. He fell like over a desk and chair. So I kicked him into this... like it's like a one person, like those little school desks with the opening in the front. Mm-hmm. So he kind of fell over this chair and desk onto the other side of it. Because I kicked the fucking kid hard. And I'm glad.
Yeah. So, this was before smartphones, so...
Oh, nobody... No world star hip hop at that point. No.
You're not on Dateline, thankfully.
So anyway, long story short, I was first of all, they didn't fire me.
Wow.
So they ended up like...
what year was this?
1993? You probably were 5.
When men were men.
That's right.
I was 9. I was that kid's age. That was my contemporary.
Right. Fuck. I'd love to have beat you up back then.
Right. I was going to say, in another time and place, you could have abused me. What kind of gum was it?
It was like extra bubble gum, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
cherry.
That might have been willing. Cherry. I would have just let you, I'd be like, do what you want. Whole pack. I don't care if it's open.
You were a seasoned veteran by then.
Yeah. No.
Seasoned.
Bring it on.
Sprinkled. So long story short, and it ended up being where his father was like an attorney, a relatively high-powered attorney. And so I got relegated to the like copy room where I had to just make copies.
So they basically did with you what they did with the priests.
Yes.
We're like, we're just going to move them to another department.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And so I talked to the kid's father on the phone, and I think, now that I think back, I can't remember if the police were involved or the threat of the police were involved.
I can't remember if the police were involved.
Because I didn't get like locked up.
I would like to think if you assaulted a 9-year-old and the police got involved, you'd remember.
I mean, I can't remember. I think it was the threat of authority. So what the kid's father made me do was buy him 2 wax boxes of baseball cards. Like the packs come in case in boxes. So he said, you buy my kid 2 boxes of Fleer, Tops, whatever it was. So I bought him like 2 boxes of baseball cards. And that was my penance.
Wow.
And I worked the rest of the... And I still got tips from some of the kids too.
Most people that lay hands on children have to pay much more than that.
Listen, I have lived a very charmed life. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. Like, I've been in so many situations that I should have been in trouble or beat up or dead.
Yeah.
And I just kind of walk away. And the second time with a kid. So now, this isn't even the ones that I fucked.
This I was just going to say, these are just the assaults.
Right. This is just what's on record.
So are these on record?
No. Well, now they are. Hello, record. So then, we're playing volleyball, and these kids now were also probably 8.
Were you guys all oiled up?
Yep.
Was Danger Zone playing?
Yep. I had just the mustache, some aviators on.
Oh.
I had a really scraggly, shitty chin beard and awful long hair, much like is starting to happen now, but worse.
Everything old is new again.
Oh, man. Midlife crisis. Let's go find a kid to fuck up right now. There's got to be one of them awake. Those Mexicans shop late at the supermarket, right?
Can I just say, getting a text message from you yesterday saying, I flat ironed my hair today.
My wife did.
Okay, either way.
It's horrible, yeah.
I just got a message that you had flat ironed your hair that day and then a series of pictures.
You asked for them.
Because I was like, picture, it didn't happen. Right, right. I always ask for pictures. And that really, that was a huge turnaround for me. I was like, I don't think I'm going to see anything this fantastic again.
Because the fucking back is curling so much.
It looked like an emo MySpace profile picture. Oh, it's bad right now.
It almost looks like, what's his name? Is it Glenn from The Walking Dead? I have like Glenn hair. Is that his name? I don't watch it either. I think it's the guy with the, like with this shit, with like this shit coming down. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway. Anyway, so the second kid that I hit when I had a ponytail, this was 1994, so I didn't learn my lesson. I'm playing volleyball, and again, the kid, like, I think the ball was out of bounds. Whatever it was led to an argument in the call, and I was very calm. So he reared back, and again, people are throwing their balls at me.
This is a different kid?
Different kid, different camp, different way upstate in Rockland County. So
what kind of camp was this?
This was just a day camp. And, oh, a funnier thing, that year, I fell in love with this girl. She worked in the wood shop. She was 16, I was 19. And one time I just left my group by themselves to just hang out with her for like 20 minutes. And the group was just unattended kids, just God knows what they were doing at that point.
It's all fun and games till that kid drowns in the lake.
And then like kills them all every Friday the 13th.
Exactly.
So we're playing volleyball. The kid's arguing. He throws the ball on me. I happen to catch it because, of course, he's 9 or whatever he is. And it, without thinking, because I, as we know, one of my best and worst qualities is my lack of thought before I act or speak. I just reared back and threw it at him. It deflected off his thumb and sprained his thumb. I hurt him. He was hurt. His father was one of the head counselors and cool as fuck. So now I'm at this point, like, am I scared? But I'm cool. Like the way I kind of operate is like, well, what the fuck? What you going to do?
What's the worst that could happen?
Right, right. And which probably could be jail. Well, maybe not jail, but
you've been tempting fate a long
time.
Right,
but I don't think jail. Maybe like a holding cell, whatever. I don't even think that. Well, you know what? I guess if he would have filed assault charges, sure, I'd be locked up for at least a little
while.
But
even then, being an upstanding
white male with no record
and having, you know, lawyers and cops and
cops
such,
in the family.
Yeah.
So
people like you and I tend to escape in the final reel, as they say.
Until the end.
Mm-hmm.
So the kid's father, I was a little scared. And the kid's father was, he's like, I'm taller than him, but I'm lanky and he's kind of solid. And he's like he's another city Bronx guy, which we can relate to each other because that's where I'm from, Queens really, but born in the Bronx. So anyway, so when he comes up to me, he's like, yeah, the kid probably fucking deserved it. Don't worry about it. And then he hired me. And
that was the dad?
Yep. And then after the summer, I worked in two places with him, and I was management in both of them.
Wow.
And I can't believe, like...
He's like, I'd just rather pay you to do the things that I'm not legally
like,
allowed
I kind
to do.
Of, like, I his kid was in a splint the rest of the summer. I fucked him up. And he hired me. I think, on some level, his kid...
You became his hired goon.
His kid was a cool dude, but he was a spoiled brat, and... I guess it's hard to justify hitting a child, but like the kid fucking deserved. You threw a. In life, sometimes you. The opposite of what we're saying happens to you and me. Sometimes you, like you yelled at that one kid, literally need to learn a consequence before you become a psychopath.
Well, because I think the kids that are assholes, I can't say this all the time because supposedly, like those bullies at school, you know, their dad's beating them at home. Maybe it manifests different with different types of abuse and trauma. But typically, the kids that I knew growing up that were assholes, it was really a case of they had this very, very charmed life with rich parents. They were being raised by some live-in nanny. They had everything they could want except attention.
Right, daddy's love.
You know, and
that happens to make great whores, by the way. So it's not all bad.
Yeah. So, you know, before they reach puberty and decide to become whores, they're just being
it's
assholes.
It's more of a boy
school.
Thing at that point, though. I mean, girls. Well, you know, you could speak on that.
No, I mean, I was bullied by more girls than boys.
Really?
Yes.
I thought the other way around from the stories or the couple stories I've heard. Really, girls? Why?
Girls were always the worst.
What did you do to them to deserve? Oh, that's what I was going to ask you before. And I was going to ask you a question when you talked about your dad saying, like, well, was it your dad that said, well, what have you done to bring this upon yourself? right? Oh, here she goes again. See, now knowing you, you're a very complex person and very different, and you do sort of coast in and out of probably bizarre situations because you're very carefree. You're very hedonistic almost, not in the worst sense of it, but is there a certain truth to that? Do you put yourself in situations that create danger or animosity?
Not the animosity so much. I mean, I've put myself through the years in many dangerous situations in various ways, you know, long term, short term, because I think I was one of those people that by the time puberty hit and I really was like self-aware, I was so miserable and hated my life. It was like, I want to die, but like can't bring myself to do it. So it was like, I'll just make unhealthy decisions and hope that something like does it for me.
And that wasn't a conscious thought.
Yeah, no. I mean, I was...
You just didn't give a fuck.
Yeah. It was all like, best case scenario, everyone notices that I'm miserable and need love and attention and support and tries to get to the bottom of it. Worst case scenario, I die and don't have to, you know, do it myself.
That's so crazy. That's heavy.
Yeah. So pretty much from like 11 on, that was just how I was living. Non-committal.
But not now.
No. I mean, there's still traces of that person, but getting out of the teenage years, just kind of like your hormones balancing, lots and lots of therapy, you know, times on different medications or recreational things that may have been more of a help. You know, you kind of find yourself and you make peace with some of your demons, and you learn how to be functional. You might not really be together, but you're functional. You can fake it till you make it, and you can maintain in public.
Survive.
And in jobs. Yeah. Yeah.
But did you have like a propensity to be disliked?
No.
So it's just a few people that would have terrorized somebody else, if not you, or was it you?
I was always bullied. Always. And I think most of that, in retrospect, it's because I was weak and vulnerable. But at the time, the things that they chose to fixate on as weak and vulnerable were my weight, usually, or being ugly. So it was always like, you know, some variation of fat, ugly, both. And
as far back as you can remember, just about, like elementary school.
Yeah, I really started packing on weight like second grade, first grade, and it was always like kind of sturdy, which I know is a joke Amy Schumer has. My dad's been calling me sturdy since I was a toddler, and I always had kind of like I remember them making jokes about like, once she got out of her diaper, it still looked like she was wearing one, because I just always kind of had that thick, sturdy build. But then that got more and more exaggerated. And as soon as I was in like, probably, yeah, like second grade, it really got out of hand. And then everyone just pounced on it.
So like, I guess like we all had that kid in elementary school that was like corroded, or that was... Were you that kid? Like, were you like the bottom of the barrel kid that everyone just fucked with? Or were you...
No, because I was always smart and funny. So what I would end up being was the most popular, you know, upper echelon girls as a group. I would be brought into their group, and I would be the like fat, funny friend. And also the smart friend. So it's like they'd copy off of me, have me help them with their homework, you know, do group projects where I'd do all the work. I'd make them all laugh and kind of like, you know, dance monkey. But they'd also be horrible to me and make fun of me.
But in a sense, it's a win-win because they're getting these services filled and you're kind of...
It's like being a prison bitch.
Right.
Yeah. You're going to be abused,
but no one else can fuck with
you. But you're being abused by them.
Right.
And at least you're maintaining some, you're in a sphere, you know? And I would rather be in that sphere as kind of like their, you know, like clown, like monkey sidekick than be nobody you know, kind of just like left to float free in this sea of awfulness. Hmm. But
fuck, man.
What about you? Like, where did you fall in the kind of social stratosphere?
I think it's almost stayed the same as it is now, or maybe not. I mean, I was always, I think,
were you always a bridge burner?
I think so. I used to be a little more sneaky and sort of subversive about it, but I've always been bored and up to no good. Mischief. Like
pitting usually, one against the other.
Well, at times that's happened. Yeah, yeah. That's kind of happened. But I think I was always a guy that if I would have just been able to like ease up and lighten up, I might have been in the in crowd. But I always was so paranoid that they were going to make fun of me or that I wasn't part of it, that I was an outsider. I think I'm like...
Were you considered good looking?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I was a good looking kid. I had like, you know, like buck teeth and huge ears and peach fuzz and very skinny. I had blue eyes. Like that was the one thing I was complimented on as a kid or, you know, whatever. But, you know, good hair. Not really though. But
so you were the Jack Donaghy of your fucking elementary school.
I think I always had potential of being, I was always like the Kanicki, you know, in a sense, like the sidekick. But I always was so insecure that I just, as we got a little bit older. And
I've always been the Rizzo. So.
Knocked up. But it was a false alarm in her case. So you really committed.
There are worse things I could do. You're welcome to my musical fans fabulous. Out there.
But, and then it just became, like I said, insecurity where like I never let myself hang out with these people that were probably welcoming me in because I didn't feel funny enough or cool enough or
trendy. Or you wonder what's the ulterior motive too. Like you're hesitant.
Like, am I getting cruel intentioned? You know, yeah. Which was before that movie happened and all, but.
That was always me too.
And that's always on me. That wasn't, who knows if it's happening or not, but there are certain people that can just float around either unaware or confident enough not to care.
Well, every time I come here, I'm always like, is he going to dump pig's blood on me? Like, I'm like.
That's the second John Travolta movie reference in like a minute.
Wow.
Fuck.
Well,
if John Travolta dies,
we'll get to massage week, hand jobs soon.
Nice.
So.
And once we stop recording.
Yeah, no. When something major happens with John Travolta.
We know we got to stop doing this.
Yeah.
Because it's always something. But
what was the first one?
That's happened?
No, what was the first John Travolta?
Grease.
Yeah, but then what was the...
Carrie. He poured the... He was involved in all that.
I forgot he was even in that.
Trendy kids, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That was in the Welcome Back Cotter days.
Oh, God. That's another one. 70s Travolta. That's a handsome man. That's a handsome man.
That's a pretty man.
He's got some cheekbones. No? Doesn't do it for you?
Guys like him, it's like I would have looked at him then and known this is a guy that's going to get gay hand jobs and be a part of a very weird religion.
Because I look at him like, I don't know how you get that vibe. Is he too pretty for his own good? Is that what it is?
There's just something.
Because I feel like he's like what I think the modern day version is Zac Efron. He can dance. He's handsome.
Also does nothing for me.
Do you think he might be gay? I really hope so.
I could see that.
I don't think he is. It bothers me that someone could be that handsome and chiseled.
It just, again, guys like them, like, because I've lived long enough, I've seen, you know, the evolution of, like, different fads of men. Usually the most, like, sex symbol type of guys out there are not at all. Like, I'm like, I wouldn't cross the street to fuck them, you know? I'd fuck their squirrely friend, but...
So you really mean that, though? Because
I really mean that. Looks alone do nothing for me.
I guess that's kind of a more female attribute.
No, it's like Leonardo DiCaprio would never... Like, nothing about him.
He's so
Brad
handsome.
Pitt, no, none of them.
But then they're both great
but
actors.
But Tom Hardy.
Right.
Because... He's fucking skeevy and dangerous. Right. Like, you know he's fucking crazy.
Right.
Like, you know he is out of his
fucking... In real life?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Like, you know he's out of his fucking mind. And that is so exciting.
Right.
You know? Like, that's always been my thing. Is, like, in Face Off, like, fuck John Travolta. Like, crazy Nicolas Cage could get it all day long.
Wow.
Because he's fucking crazy.
Another John Travolta.
He's clearly crazy.
We're going to go through John Travolta's entire pantheon of movies before this one's over.
Yeah, no. We'll kill him yet.
Wait till Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
That's coming.
Everybody, by the time this drops, if it hasn't happened already, get in there to your death pools.
We're saying right now, I would say John Travolta. Okay, today is May 16th, 15th, 16th, 2016. John Travolta will be dead by June 1st. What do you think about that?
I think I'm not going to necessarily say dead, but I think given something, the nature of our podcast, by June 1st,
something will happen.
Some major newsworthy thing.
He will
thing.
Trend on Facebook yeah. and Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's death, but something major with John Travolta will happen.
I agree.
Yeah. Guaranteed.
I agree.
Because for no reason, he's come up and stayed a topic now. Right. Like,
and we've had a lot of things that have come up on and off mic that have been so random.
Come to fruition.
And then within days
yeah.
of hitting that stop button, something.
Yeah. Which, again, begs the question, did it, was it something that we like tapped into some cosmic shift towards them and what was going on? Or did we conjure it?
Well, yeah. It has to be the first because I'm sure a billion people are talking about God knows yeah. what. Who the fuck are we? Although you are Captain Outer Body, so.
Oh, God. So yeah,
You certainly, I don't want to get on your bad side. In fact, you've told stories about.
Royce Lopez is rolling his eyes and cringing so hard. I'm sure I'm going to get memed about this ruthlessly.
But you also, and you believe this, if I remember correctly, because BJ, I think it was off mic, told the story about how you voodoo dolled him for a full day. Like you fucked him good.
Did that not make it to the air?
I don't remember now.
Oh, I'm so sorry if it didn't, because I was really hoping it did. And that crossed my mind today because I didn't get to finish that.
No,
we
were talking about it by the pool table.
Okay.
But again, without, I guess.
If I direct my energy positively or negatively towards things,
it'll happen.
Stuff tends to happen.
Like, he got eaten by like a swarm of red ants and shit his pants or I don't even know what.
BJ and I almost never fight. You know, even if we're both like, not even then, even if we both get like grumbly a little, like, it's really not a fight. This day, I was actively mad at him. Actively mad. And he knew it. And the sequence of events was he's working. He ended up, like, as he's doing something, all of a sudden he got this stabbing pain in his back, like he'd just been stabbed, that dropped him to the floor.
While working.
So then he gets up, kind of like shakes it off, keeps going. As he's working, all of a sudden he has this feeling on his legs, and his legs are like covered in ants that are attacking him. And he was like, Jesus Christ! So then he goes to the next call, once he gets that sorted out, and promptly gets electrocuted. And then he leaves that call and is in the work truck, and he's about to, like, you know, turn onto a road, and he looks both ways and there's nothing there, and then turns and almost gets completely T-boned by a truck, like it was 6 inches, like screeching brakes kind of situation. So after that happened, he texted me and he was like, knock it off. And instead of being surprised, like, or even questioning what he was saying, my response was to send like a meme of like a Disney villain in front of the green like smoke, like, and it, on the bottom it says like maniacal laughter, like a screenshot. And that was the part that really tipped him off, was like, how did you, not even questioning what was going on, no concern for my safety, like, you're just sitting at home mad at me and you just said,
yeah, he hasn't told you what happened
yet. Yeah.
So if I do pour pig's blood, you lock the doors from the inside and burn the place down.
I don't know.
So you should have killed more bullies. I guess you didn't know yet at this young age that you had these, you know, or maybe you have.
Honestly,
fuck.
Massage school. When I went to massage school and it was all about like learning the true nature of your body and your energy. And like, it was just all about like how everything's energy and like whatever you direct your energy toward, you know, you can like make happen. It was like that book, The Secret. And as we went through this and it was like 6 months intensive, like living this, it was like, oh my God, it's true. And I started to notice like anything I talked about or thought about or directed stuff towards, it would kind of like just appear where it's like, oh, that's so crazy. We were just talking about this, and then all of a sudden this pops up. So I don't know. I guess maybe I didn't pay attention beforehand or it wasn't happening, but that was when I first kind of noticed.
Were you actively like, was it just the like overall bad feelings, or were you directing bad things toward BJ?
Well, no, he's thinking that like I have a voodoo,
right.
Voodoo
so
doll
what
that I'm
was
like,
it though?
No, I didn't do
he
anything.
He just fucked with you and the universe had to swallow him up.
Yeah, I was, yes. I, for the first time ever with him, sat there actively, like, I also had PMS. I was being a bitch, you know, it was both sides, but I was actively, like, negative towards him.
That flashlight, there's a guy with a flashlight that just scared the fuck out of me.
Oh.
So I thought I saw the bat signal.
I know. Well, I got scared because this is the Shamrock, and then all of a sudden you look like
terrified.
A fucking cat in one of those YouTube videos.
I just like, hope, like Blair Witch style, when we do get murdered here, I hope somebody can read the instructions by my computer of how to post this, and the world can hear it. That's all.
Yeah.
Fuck. Okay, sorry. I got a little startled there.
The new Poughkeepsie tapes.
Holy shit. Anyway.
The Shamrock tapes. Meanwhile, this is like Watergate right now.
Man. We need to like record everything. Like have a second recorder, record in between and before and after so that someday that can all come out. Like, you know, the fucking lost tapes can come out one day. And, you know, maybe four people might, you know, care.
Exactly. It was like my wedding. Like if there had just been that kind of, you know, intense documentation, we wouldn't have lost Durkin. We would just know where to find him. But sometimes life hands you a little Scooby-Doo mystery and you just got to go for it.
He's just like walking around with that garter trying to find somebody to put it on.
Oh my God. That was my favorite thing about getting all like the stuff back from the wedding is just like seeing BJ's face when he realizes that he's thrown the garter directly to Durkin.
But of course. Of course.
How else could it have gone? You know?
It was followed by the sound of 15,000 vaginas closing. Maybe I'm exaggerating.
It was like when you disturb one of those like oyster beds. They all just close up in unison.
Protecting
like they send a
pearl.
Signal to one another. Yeah.
Fuck.
Oh my God.
I think we should take one more break.
Agreed.
Come back and put this cunt to bed.
Put this cunt to bed is the episode name.
And
we're back on the Loose News Podcast.
So what is up with, we both urinated.
Yes.
You went first. I'm a gentleman.
Yes.
And like, here's the thing. So now I'm at the age, I've probably mentioned where after I pee, besides shaking it dry, I got to wipe. Not that I have to, but like if I'm not home, I wipe. I wipe my dick hole.
Do you wipe with your wet wipes or you wipe with
No,
toilet
with
paper?
Dry okay. Toilet paper. But the problem is, and it manifested tonight, like I shake and then I pat it dry. And then like my dick somehow hates me to the point that as soon as it goes back in my pants, it dribbles. Like it was completely dry. Maybe, of course, the angle down clearly pushed it up. But what the fuck?
Does this happen if you don't wipe it?
I don't know. It's not like a consistent thing.
When did you start wiping it?
Last couple months.
Okay. Was it in response to the dribbling being a problem after?
I think it was in response to that I had to shake it 8,000 times. I'm like, I'm just tired of shaking this fucking thing.
But did you have the dribble after?
Without the paper? Sometimes, yeah.
For sure?
You know me. I don't know shit, but I think.
I was going to say, in my mind, if that were like a new phenomenon with all that, you're irritating. Like,
I'm just patting it so ever so gently.
Yeah, just
a little
kissing it like dew on a flower.
That's it. So it's just these things with age that fucking like today. Like, I hurt my testicle shitting today.
What?
Yeah, like I'm on the toilet, maybe
go on,
maybe reading my phone or whatever. And like, I don't think I pushed that hard. And in fact, at Mahoney's Sunday night, I pushed real hard because I was in a rush. I had to shit at Mahoney's downstairs.
You were literally pitching it for the kids.
Fuck. Pinching one for the kids.
You were pitching for the kids.
So, but no, so like at work today, I pushed one out. No harder than usual. I like to wait till it's ready to fall. I don't like to push.
Just like a, you know, a girl at prom with an unwanted baby.
Perfect. And like, I kind of felt like a little tinge in my right ball. And then I'm like, oh, okay. And then it kind of was a little sore. And then I felt sort of, I felt like a hernia type feeling, like right in the upper, lower, mid pelvis area.
Your inguinal region.
My inguinal region, you know, like right near Anguilla. Beautiful island. It's an island, right? I believe it is. Anyway. And now, okay, it went away, but like all day, I'm like, fuck, now I hurt myself shitting. Like, I've now hurt myself shitting. I dribble. Like, what's 10 years from now going to be like? I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm just, I hurt my back fucking my wife this weekend.
You're going to get your jollies paying people to wipe your ass. That's what 10 years from now looks like.
Oh my God. Like, I'm done. I don't want to go on. This is it.
Well, I don't think this is the end.
But it's the beginning of the end.
Yeah, I think we reach a point in our lives where it's kind of like, oh, I can see that this is, you know, I'm just cruising down the hill now.
It's like more than foreshadowing. Like, it's sort of upon me.
Well, when you're coming down the hill, you can see what's on the other side.
Oh.
So I think that's what it is.
I'm terrified. I'm truly terrified. I cannot cope with too much more. Like, I'm turning 40. I'm not going crazy. It's fine. But I can't go much past that.
Well, you upgraded already from a minivan to, like, a blue sparkly sports car.
Well, I've had the sports car. It's a Honda Accord.
It's sporty.
It's a two-door. And I've upgraded from Ryan Dalton to you.
Everything in your life is becoming very streamlined. But I don't think it's a bad thing.
What, getting ready to?
Any of it.
Like, that I can't piss properly, that I hurt my balls shitting, that I hurt my back fucking my wife. Whoa,
what was the third part there?
I hurt my back this weekend banging my wife. Well, first of all, I have a bad back, lower back.
That's so romantic that you are still banging your wife, you know, viciously enough.
Well, it wasn't even, it was, yeah, listen, I was in there. What happened was a certain pharmaceutical rep friend of mine gave me a handful of Cialis.
Oh, my.
And I took two. And I told her, yo, shit's going down tonight. And so we did it actually in the closet. No. Wait, was it? It was in the bed. And then.
How could you even mistake the two?
Well, because the last time before that, it was in the closet. We had like a walk-in closet. And then. So we did it in the bed. It was good. It was actually way longer than I normally last, but not a marathon by any stretch. But the second time, we did it again, and
you gave her time to wake up.
Right. Exactly.
So you did it twice.
There were hours in. No, there was like a couple hours in between. Okay. So we went upstairs again, did it again, and I guess again I have a bad back from a shoveling injury from like 5 years ago that every
you're such a gangster
couple times a year flares up. It was that weird Halloween snowstorm with that heavy ass wet snow and shit, and and I shot some wet snow out of my dick onto her. So
gave that bitch a snow cone.
Anyway, like I guess like I went longer than normal and my back said, hey fucker, you can't do this. You know, you ain't in practice for this. This is the Olympics now. You ain't even make the trials.
Were you doing anything, any strange positions or anything out of the ordinary?
I think that time was just missionary. Wait, because I think was her back? There was a reason. Oh, you know what? Because she has a Fitbit now, right? And they have these things where you can like challenge your friends to who can like calories or take more steps in a day. So she's like, that day in particular was nuts. Like, she paced during everything. She went to the gym and pushed it for 3 hours. So she was so sore, she had to stay on her like back. So it was missionary because she was fucking done. She was so sore. And then I don't think I drilled it all that hard, but like my back was hurting for days.
If she was that desperate to win, she would have rode you.
Well, no, she did. So wait, yeah, no, eventually she actually did. She did get on top. She's like, look, I ain't going to be much of anything right now, but I want a couple more steps. And, the funny thing, the worst part is I think she only burned like 9 calories.
Really?
Something like that. It wasn't a lot. Or no, 18. She burned like 18 calories with me fucking her. That's sad. And I have a joke in my act that I've been doing now about, like, I got to make her take the Fitbit off before sex because now there's tangible metrics to how bad at sex I am. Like, it's one step away from telling me how long she fantasized about other dudes.
She's going to have to start, like, using negative calorie vegetables as dildos if she wants to fucking burn more calories. Fuck.
That's where I'm at, though. I'm a piss dribbling, ball aching, back fucker loser.
That's not going to be good on your Tinder bio.
And that's just one of a million things that are just, it's over. It's over. I flat ironed my hair. I'm losing my eyelashes on the bottom. It's over.
This is taking a real turn.
I'm sorry. I've confessed.
So flat ironing your hair, that's, can we safely assume that that's maybe like a reaction to all of these things that you're starting to notice about yourself?
I don't think so. No, I just hate that flip. It's getting cut. Dalton, you're going to be happy it's going soon.
But so was 39 like the turning point this past year? These things started out of nowhere?
Well, the back's been hurting for a few years.
The back. As soon as you start calling it the back, yeah, the old you're back. Already, yeah, I'm done. You're done.
I was watching this band perform a number on TV. when I'm watching my program.
God. Do you have a wheel watcher ID? You have a wheel watcher ID.
I don't even know what that is, thank God.
Thank you, Jesus.
Is that Wheel of Fortune?
Yeah.
Oh, that was a guess. Good. That show is so dumb. That show really is for morons. It's for morons.
It's the worst game show ever.
And it follows Jeopardy, which is probably the best game show, so it's crazy.
I heart you so hard right now.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's not saying much. That's obviously.
It really is just like, why would you lead from something that has such like a certain audience that's clearly intellectual into just like, and first of all, it's not even like, why is Vanna White there? She hasn't had to turn a letter
Now since 1994. Right. She's Magic Martying that shit. She's just kind of like not even touching the square. She's just like pointing at it.
It really, yeah. And she's so old and just like Skeletor. Yeah. And it's just, to me, you might as well just like have a mannequin standing there next to the board while the numbers clearly light up on their own like they should in this day and age. It's like, no, we have her on some type of like dolphin asshole contract that we can't get out of. It's like, why do we keep having her here? And it's like, if Drew Carey could take over for Bob Barker, fucking let Pat Sajak retire. Like, I'm so done. Like, spice it up, change it around, make it fun. Or it just, never
just
was.
End the
but
show.
Yeah.
Although it was fun.
But it is America's Game Show, which says a lot.
Is that
lot.
What they call it?
Yeah.
It was fun. You might be too young for this. You probably aren't. You probably remember this. Back when they used to win and they'd go shopping. Do you remember that?
No.
Like, instead, okay, so back in the 80s when it first came out, instead of winning like a vacation or money, they would like show the, you know, like a an ISO cam of the guy's head or girl's head who won. And then they'd be in like in this, say they won 10 grand. Oh, I'll take that armoire for 2 grand and I'll take that ski set. They'd go shopping.
So it was like at the end of Chuck E. Cheese when you cash
right,
in your tickets.
That's exactly. And it was the best.
And it's like, well, we don't have quite enough for that
right,
remote like, control
okay,
car.
Come
but
on, dummy. Like, why'd you get the fucking...
I'll take 2 slinkies and a snake ring.
A couple ring pops. But I don't know where we're going with the Wheel of Fortune. How'd that come up? Wheel of Fortune. I don't even... I'm old. I'm a wheel watcher, whatever the fuck you said. Yeah, no, I'm done.
And we can't remember what we say anymore.
I'm done. Well, if it happened when you were 2 in the crib, you would have remembered, but 2 minutes ago, not so much.
It's like Dory.
But you were sober in the crib.
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
Unfortunately.
And you were pissed about it.
I was like, I can't pour my own drinks yet. Why?
You were begging your mom to drink while she was breastfeeding.
Damn you. I think she did. Damn you clumsy arms.
So you weren't having out of body. You were just drunk.
Probably. Yeah.
You came out hammered.
I was just hallucinating.
You're like Stewie. You're the female Stewie.
I really kind of am.
You kind of are.
I've been plotting her death ever since.
You're Stewie Schnoor.
Oh my fucking God. How far back can you remember? If this is so crazy, how far back can you remember?
I remember a couple things. I remember...
Mostly
getting my dick sucked.
Molestation.
No, I remember like probably a glimpse of like kindergarten. But I have memories in first grade, which is creepy because my daughter's in first grade. I remember we were at one of those cluster tables of 4 kids, 2 girls, 2 boys, and we went under the desk and showed our privates to each other. And it was awesome. It was my first time seeing a vagina.
And your first thought was, damn, that looks like a fortune cookie.
A hot dog is what I thought. Like a hot dog bun.
I guess. Okay.
And I was like, wow, I just love it. And then my other memory of first grade, and this is very indicative of me, is that we had to write like an essay. I don't know if I can call it an essay, but like a one-page summary of something. No, it was a story. And this girl, Anne Marie, was the smartest girl in the class. Somehow I thought I got away with this. I took her paper, erased her name, and put mine on it.
Wow.
And when they read it out loud, like she told on me, because of course, you know, she's like, that's fucking mine, dick. But at that age, I always, this reminds me of this. So when I was in third grade,
You're always an opportunist.
Right. And I always have to get what I want at all costs. In third grade, I brought two He-Man figures to class, which got taken away. And I was in the French, some after-school French thing that day. So I ended up like leaving the French thing, getting into the classroom and taking them back. Like I can't really rest easy until everything that I need or own is like with me. I have an anxiety.
Those were your first sleep pants.
That's it. But like if my wife loans out a DVD or something to someone, I'm like, I want all my stuff with me.
Yeah.
I have a weird OCD with that. So like I once had, this is a good story. I went to a concert at Roseland down in the city. Mm-hmm. And in walking in, getting frisked by the guard, he found weed in my pocket or my sock. He found it. He took away my weed. And
he thought to look in your sock?
Yeah, frisking me, felt the bump or something, patted down.
It's usually the last place they look.
Right. Well, maybe it was in my pocket, wherever it was, he found it. That was my sock. He found it. And he put it in the garbage. So now, he forgets me, but I'm standing.
What a lame bouncer.
Well, right. And then I'm standing behind him now, and I'm like, you know what? If I have to miss this show, I'm getting that weed back because fuck him.
Now it's a principal thing.
It's a principal thing.
Now you're on a mission.
Plus, I wanted to get high at the show. So, and it also was expensive weed, which that's kind of irrelevant. So
it wasn't swag.
As I'm like maybe 10, 20, 10, 15 feet behind him, watching him just pat down everyone else, I'm just plotting in my head with such tunnel vision, such clarity. Okay, like I'm going to reach in the garbage. I'm trying to just find the path of least resistance, but yet the most effective path that I'm going to get my fucking weed back is fuck this guy. So as I'm thinking about it, like almost as a gift from above, he reaches in the garbage can and puts it in his pocket. Okay, so now I'm like, got him. And this is a big motherfucker. Big. And I'm a piece of shit. Okay, so now I'm a little dude. So I go up to him and I tap him on the back and he turns around. I'm like, hey, I saw you take that. Oh, side note. I took 20 bucks out in my hand also. That was my first, maybe I'll just give him 20 bucks. Yeah. And bro, just look the other way. So it's in my hand. So I tap him on the shoulder and I was like, I saw what you did. He's like, fuck, he didn't probably know who I was. I'm like, my weed that you took away and then threw in the garbage, 3 minutes later, you took it and put it in your pocket. So for a second, you can see this idiot like trying to think. He's like, oh no, well, I got to give it to my supervisor. Like, but then you wouldn't have thrown it in the garbage in the first place. You're going to keep that.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, what are you fucking talking about? I'm like, listen, you know, and at this point again, like I get balls when I'm not usually this brave and it's a big dude. He's going to kick me out.
Yeah.
He could have kicked me out. And I said, unless you want me to call that supervisor over right now and explain what's going on, give me that weed right now and this is over. And wow. He goes in his pocket and gave me the weed.
That's amazing. And how old were you?
This was a couple, this is probably about, I was probably 32.
Okay, so 30, you weren't 32. Like.
I wasn't a kid. Yeah. And then, but I'm still a pussy. And then I gave him the 20 bucks anyway. I'm like, hey, no hard feelings, just doing your job. Because I felt like that was kind of the right thing.
Yeah, and you want to ensure that you're not going to be fucked
with. I didn't even think of that. Yeah. I just was like, hey, this guy, whatever, we're on the level now. And then, like, I called my wife. I was almost never prouder of myself. I couldn't believe that worked.
Wow. I'm impressed.
I was so proud. And then I got high all show long.
It had a happy ending.
It was so,
all around.
And then, right. All around.
Although you just literally handed him your happy ending money.
Right. So. You know, I handed him a Tubman. And how great is the fact that Harriet Tubman is going on the money after I have a joke about being the Harriet Tubman of hand jobs? Like that's just great.
Yeah. So now when anymore. I text my weed dealer, I'll be like, he'll be like, what you want? I'll be like, I'll take a tub.
I'll take a tub.
Everything's coming up Milhouse. I admire your balls in that situation.
What it comes down to
even if they hurt
from shitting, it's just this lack of I guess I don't like being told what to do. And even when they're right, the teacher, like, I shouldn't have had the toy in class. I should have brought weed anywhere. Yeah. But yet, like, I have to get my way. What a brat. I'm a fucking brat that probably deserves a good beating one time.
Or you could say that you're, like, fiercely intelligent and independent-minded, where you realize that there's no reason for that to be actually happening, and it's an injustice, even though it's going against the rules, quote-unquote.
Right, but I'm not smart enough to think all that. I just think I'm a brat. Like, I guess you're right, but so, you know.
It's all on how you spin it, really.
I always wished I could see my world through your eyes. I really wish I could.
It would probably be a much different view.
I'd be getting laid a lot.
Oh, my God.
If I saw me how you think I should see me, I'd be getting all kinds. I'd be smashing.
I would drive you into the ground. That's what would happen. I would just ruin you. Because, like, you have so much at your fingertips, literally. And, like, you never reach for that brass ring.
No.
And it's like, it keeps coming. Just fucking, just do it.
Yeah. But then, conversely, if you saw life through my eyes... And I mean more just like attitude and outlook. You'd just probably never leave the house.
Or I'd be on the bridge. Right. One of the two.
Right.
Jumping off it or burning it to the ground. Yeah, but that's always the issue with any people. It's like, oh, if I just, you know, could see things your way or have your confidence or be that smart or be that funny.
Right.
Yeah, we're all lacking things that other people have, and we all want what we don't have.
Maybe we do have some yang.
We do.
You know, I think we could really, like, we could really manipulate somebody. I bet, like, you and I put our minds together. We could probably get someone to drink the Kool-Aid. We could Jonestown that shit.
We got Joe Coletta to drink my piss.
He kind of wanted to.
Yeah, no.
He was a willing participant in that.
I think he would have let himself back out. And we just weren't going to let that happen. It's like, no, you've got no choice anymore.
It was awesome.
It was. It was totally worth
it. It looked pretty clear.
Yeah.
It wasn't really that like much ammonia
wasn't dank.
Or whatever.
No, yeah. Like, I stay hydrated.
Right.
When you drink as much as I do, you got a lot of turnover. You probably caught a little buzz and went about his night. My urine could be classified as a controlled substance, probably. Can we say that? I don't care.
Listen.
No one's listening this far. Except you, Felter. You the real MVP.
I wonder who... Yeah, most people, there's no way they're making a pass. And I don't blame them. Look, I wouldn't.
No.
I would not listen.
I don't.
Well, I have to sometimes. There's not much editing on this one, probably, but I have to listen at least once. And we get no credit for it in the metrics because it's not online. Oh,
that's
well.
That's a real shame. That one was really going to make or break us.
Hey, listen, it's that straw that broke the camel's back. You never know, like
always
you said.
Always is.
Well, fuck. Well, I guess this shit, I kind of like hijacked that last segment here with fucking bald back and dick leak. Do you want to relate to that in any way? Do you have any kind of leaks happening?
No.
That's something that I just can't imagine. At your roast, when I compared you to a used car, it sounds like Ross, but someone yells out, "You didn't mention the leaks." And I was like, "I never saw one."
I missed that completely.
Someone yells that out. And
oh my God.
So do you have any leaks? Do you have anything going on?
No.
Do you have anything with age that's now happened that sucks yet, or you're still not quite at that age yet?
Just like I remember back when older people used to tell me, like, if you keep making that face, it'll stay that way. And now, like, there's so many lines on my face where I'm like, fuck. Like, and I try and, like, recreate in the mirror. I'm like, what face was I making? Like, fuck this shit.
Is it the big, like, circle mouth, like a blow-up doll, that face? Or...
That one didn't stick, really. I should have eaten more popsicles.
That one but... washed off.
Yeah. No, it's all just, like... angst and shock and
awe. You don't seem to have too much as far as wear and tear. What? You don't?
Thanks.
You're welcome.
It's been rebuilt. Just don't check the Horfax. Well, this has been the Loose News Podcast.
It certainly has. For Shannon Schnorr Cook, I am the king of all mediocrity.
Liam Nazareth, everybody.
Good night.